The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
A report looking at the decisions of An Bord Pleanála has gone to An Garda Síochána, to the DPP and to SIPO. An ever-contracting rental market, a lack of accommodation for refugees, new rules around short-term lets and much more to discuss with Minister for Housing, Local Government and Heritage, Dara O'Brien, who joins us now. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, can you take us through the sending of the report by Remy Farrell, Senior Counsel, to three different agencies, An Garda Síochána, SIPO and the DPP? Explain the rationale for these decisions.
Yeah, well, Pat, as you'll be aware, and many of your listeners will be aware, toward in the middle of April, we became aware of some quite significant commentary around potential wrongdoing within the board, and some very specific allegations were made. So on the 27th of April, I appointed Senior Counsel Remy Farrell, along with Chris Mills, barrister, to carry out a targeted time-bound review of specifically of the allegations that were made, because I treat any allegations of inappropriate actions or inappropriate behaviours of any members of An Bord Pleanála, which is a very important part of our planning system, very, very seriously. And I want to ensure that public can have trust in the impartiality of the board and the system
but
itself.
Did you not say to me that Remy Farrell could follow whatever he found to wherever it led? And yet he confined himself to a very narrow brief.
Well, maybe just to conclude, sorry, on that, I received the report on the 28th of July, and since the 28th of July, I've been obviously reviewing and assessing the report and taking legal advice directly with the Attorney General. And the advice that I got, which I completely agree with, is that the contents of the report are of such a nature that it requires referral to the Director of Public Prosecutions, to An Garda Síochána, and indeed to the Standard and Public Office Commission. There are other reviews that are underway at the moment. There's one in particular relating to further allegations that are there, which is a senior management review, a team within the board that are concluding that work. And I expect to receive that report in the coming days. But I didn't want to delay in any way, shape or form the actions that it was taking vis-a-vis
But let's tease out each of the recommendations that you've made. One is to go to the Garda Síochána. Now, that suggests a Garda investigation will be required, and then they in turn may or may not send a file to the DPP. But you're already sending this to the DPP. Is that to clear it for publication, or is that to instigate a potential prosecution?
Well, it'll be a matter for the DPP, obviously, as to how she decides to proceed with it. But I do believe the report is of important public interest. I do believe the report should be published, but I obviously want to make sure the publication of the report won't in any way impinge upon the investigation that will go on and the deliberations of the DPP and indeed the Gardaí. But I have directly asked the DPP for her own views on the publication of the report. Mm. Or are there aspects of the report that we cannot publish right now? Because I do believe in transparency. I think it is a matter of public interest. So I would like to have the report published as soon as possible.
Is it possible we might see it in a redacted form, that particularly any elements that might prejudice the course of justice would be redacted for the moment?
Well, look, that is obviously a possibility, but the report has only gone to the three agencies that I mentioned just yesterday. So I'll await to receive advice from them. We've been very careful and deliberate in what we've done heretofore. As I said, I take this situation extremely seriously. I've acted upon it promptly, and I want to make sure that anything we do won't prejudice any investigation. That said, I have specifically asked of the DPP her own views with regard to the publication of the report, and I've given my desire that it would be published. If it requires a redaction, that would be something that would obviously come by way of advice from the DPP. That said, other things that we're doing, we're not stopping with that. I've already made some significant changes within the board in relation to even decision-making. So I've insisted on the cessation of the two-person decision-making process, We've an internal review in relation to the revision of the allocation of files, internal compliance, various things like that. And also, you know, further announced yesterday in my statement, I've already provided an additional 24 posts on board Planola. There's no question, a very, very busy and important agency that we have. And I intend to approve further substantial increase in staffing within the board. But then also looking about how the compliance and governance in the board is actually managed. And that's why very clearly within what I said there yesterday will be the appointment of a senior legal advisor to the board themselves that will sit on board Planola and that will provide me with a monthly report on compliance and governance within on board Planola. So
Minister,
those other changes are very significant.
You've asked for this other report from on board Planola itself. I mean, it is not really acceptable that the board investigates itself. I mean, it doesn't matter whether they're honourable men and women true who do the investigation. The transparency and expecting everyone, given what we know now, what is in the public domain about all the goings-on in the board, about, you know, telephone masks and, you know, contravening inspectors' recommendations, all of this stuff, it's in the public domain. I'm not making it up. It's all there. And, you know, expecting the board to come out with a report, whether it's honest and true or not, that would be credible. Any outfit investigating itself is almost impossible to be, I suppose, clear-eyed about its own deficiencies.
I think, firstly, Pat, if you look what I've done with regard to the initial review by Remy Farrell, that in itself was an unprecedented step, where a senior counsel has come in a very time-bound
Yeah, but he's independent and he came in to do a specific job
No, I understand.
On one member of the board.
Yeah, and there's two other processes ongoing. One relates to other allegations that have been made, and we received quite a significant amount of correspondence, all of which was forwarded. Now, the senior management team are people who are not involved in planning within the board. This is permitted under the existing legislation that is there, and I might talk to you about future legislation in a moment. They will report back to me. That is a report that under existing legislation was requested by the chairperson of On Board Planola, Dave Walsh.
But Dave Walsh himself, and not casting any aspersions on him, he's been involved in decisions with Paul Hyde. So do you know what I mean? The boss of On Board Planola is also a decision maker in the board, not just an overarching chairman who takes a bird's eye view of things. He's a practitioner. So again, in the interests of transparency, you know, is this kind of investigation by the board of itself fit for purpose?
Look, I take the point you're making, but this report will come to me. I'll decide on any future course of action, including, further investigations in that regard. There is another plank of investigations here and another, which is the independent organisational review of On Board Planola, and that's going to be carried out by the Office of the Planning Regulator, and that will include independent planning experts from other jurisdictions who we've already identified, and it'll be work in conjunction with Conlett Bradley's senior counsel as well. So that in itself is a very strong response to what's happened here, because fundamentally we need to ensure that the integrity of the board, that the board can operate and can operate in a transparent way and in an efficient way. So there are three different things. We've concluded the first piece, which is the Remy Farrell report. The internal review is being undertaken by On Board Planola anyway. That report has to come to me. The third piece then is the Office of the Planning Regulator with Senior Counsel Conlett Bradley and experts from outside of this jurisdiction, the terms of reference of which will be concluded this week. That will be time-bound as well. I expect that to be completed within about 6 weeks. But in the meantime, then, there are other changes that I've already alluded to, which I've made already, because the structure of the board, how the board operates into the future, will require, in my view, additional changes to planning law. And I intend to bring a memorandum to government in early September outlining what I wish to do with regard to the future direction of the board. And that will be informed by the review of the OPR. So I think, to be fair, Pat, this is the most comprehensive look into not just the allegations, but the operation of the board and how it has been managed.
Here's
so we've
a,
done it. heretofore in a very...
Okay, and I accept that you're trying to get to the bottom of all of this, but here's an issue. Various communities appealed against various decisions and, you know, they found themselves surprisingly overruled by the board. And SHDs, as you know, went straight to the board, and it seems that board members could pick and choose which decisions they were going to be involved with, which... I hope that's going to change because, you know, that's a recipe for some sort of potential temptation, shall we say. But those, you know, those permissions that have been given against the run of play, if you like, by the board, and then if they are found to be tainted in the Remy Farrell investigation and any criminal prosecution that might follow, what of those permissions that have maybe damaged communities, damaged local amenities? Are they to stay standing?
Well, Pat, firstly, you mentioned SHDs, and on your show on a number of occasions, I've discussed that. In opposition, I said I would cease the single stage approval process in SHDs, and I've done that. I've done that a number of months ago, as you know, and SHDs are no more because I believe in a planning system that is rooted in the local authorities first and foremost, and then should someone wish to make an appeal, they can, of course, do that. To On Board Planola. So SHDs themselves are gone, and they're gone well before any of these allegations or this process actually started. So I was good to my word on that. I think in relation to decisions that have been made, that would be a matter for people to assess when the report is published itself. But we've a bit more work to do on this.
I'm wondering what the legal position is. If a developer, and we're not saying that the developers are involved in any of the wrongdoing that may or may not have occurred, but they've built out or are about to start a development that is tainted, if that's how it turns out, what then? What is to happen?
But I'm not saying at this stage, and obviously I'm somewhat restricted as to what I can say with regard to the report at this moment in time. But that's why I want to ensure as best as possible that we can publish the report. I've written to the Joint Directors Committee, the chairperson, Stephen Matthews, and all opposition spokespeople on housing as well to inform them of the process and what we've done so far. So I think that's another step forward, Pat. It's something that I can't comment on right now, to be fair. What I would say, though, too, the OPR review, assisted by Conor Bradley, senior counsel as well, would be a very important one, too. The structure within the board and how the board operates and the decision-making is something that that is being looked at.
Yeah.
And I will be bringing measures to government in September. And the other thing which I did discuss with you before is the full review of planning itself, which is work that has been underway between myself and the Attorney General, which we expect a consolidated planning bill later this year in the autumn, which will be the most significant updating of our planning legislation since the year 2000. So there's a lot of moving parts in this. And whilst we're doing this, we need to make sure that we've an efficient and effective planning system that can continue to make sure that we can that the developments that we need happen, both on the housing side and infrastructure and schools and other things as well. So, you know, a lot of work has gone into this right the way through the summer.
And I appreciate all of that. And, there's with all these big developments, particularly, there's huge money involved. And the lack of transparency in the board, for example, if you write to the board looking for the minutes of a meeting over, you know, at which the board overruled its own inspectors or overruled a county council and the county council's inspectors, you get the minutes under Freedom of Information, which says X and Y attended. That's it. That's the minutes. Now, I know people who've been on state boards and the minutes of every meeting they have are real minutes. They're not just attendance records, but that's what you get back from a board planola. That is not satisfactory. If an inspector is overruled, it should give chapter and verse as to the reasons.
The rationale, of course.
Yeah, and that's not given.
That will be, sorry, Pat, not to cut across you there. That is one of the elements and the decision-making process that will be covered by the Office of the Planning Regulators review with outside experts from outside of this jurisdiction supported by senior counsel. And that will be done in a time-bound way. I expect that to be done within 6 weeks. And that will inform some of the other changes that we will make to the board. There is no question, if you look at the process and procedures and how the board operates, that there have not been significant changes to that in the past. A lot of these issues we're dealing with, and I'm dealing with, are legacy issues that need to be addressed. And I've been very serious about addressing them. So that very point that you've made would be absolutely under the remit of the OPR review, the Office of Planning and Regulatory Review. We need a transparent, we need an efficient system. And as Minister for Housing and Planning, I'm absolutely determined to ensure that that happens. We were doing many of these things already before these allegations were made. I did take the allegations extremely seriously, and that's why I took the unprecedented step of appointing a senior counsel to carry out a very significant body of work, which does, in fairness, there will be learnings from that. I do need to let the DPP and An Garda Síochána investigation happen. I would like to see the report published as soon as possible so people can see that. Yeah. And then we will be continuing to work on the other areas of reform that are absolutely required. One of which you mentioned, which we've done already, which was removing SHDs, the single stage approval process, which caused a lot of controversy, I would say, amongst communities across the country and didn't speak to transparency as I would like it. So as Minister in this government made that change to make sure that the SHD process ceased and the planning returned to a two-stage process.
And Minister, finally on this planning aspect of things, you know, a rules-based system would be wonderful. And I've said it before, and it's worth, I hope you take it on board, that if you have a rules-based system that you say, this is what's allowed here, that's what's allowed there, this is the width of a road you can have here, this is the length of a garden that you must have, all of those things, everyone knows where they stand. Antashka know where they stand. The locals know where they stand. The developer knows where they stand. The council knows where they stand. You know, that kind of rules-based system means that there'll be far fewer rows and far fewer judicial reviews.
I agree, Pat, and that's where we're getting to. We need a plan-led process where there are less surprises. And I think one of the issues that arose out of SHDs was that in some instances, county development plans were not regarded in that process. That process has ended. So any applications now, even for large-scale developments and residential developments, must begin at the local authority. A very clear and open pre-planning process where minutes are taken and published is also now in place there too, where communities have a much better view as to what is proposed and as to what is proposed to happen. All that being said, the reason why we have a planning system is, one, to make sure it's fair, that we plan properly for the development of our country, for our homes and infrastructure that we have. And we are in a situation that we need at least an average of 33,000 homes per annum. So we need developments. We need new homes for our people. And we're seeing, thankfully, increases in that space. But whilst we're doing that, there is no question that there are matters within the board that need to be addressed. And that's why I took the step in April to move forward with this process of looking at the allegations and that were there. And
we look forward to all of this playing out in the autumn. Now, there are a number of other things in on your desk.
Yes.
I mean, a suggestion from one developer that gardens should be smaller, roads should be narrower in order to cram more houses in. The carrot being offered to you as minister, I suppose, was that houses would be cheaper. None of us believe that, of course. But what do you think? Narrower roads and smaller gardens, where do I put the trampoline? Where do I put the garden shed? I don't know. This developer says I don't need any of those things.
Well, look, I think my main focus is to drive affordability within the housing market, and that's why we brought forward the Affordable Housing Act and why the First Home Scheme is up and running now, which is, helps people bridge the gap between the finance they have and the finance that we need. And even in the short space of 4 to 6 weeks, we've had hundreds of applications to that scheme and we've had our first approvals. We have affordable housing being built by local authorities and which people will be occupying this year for the first time in nearly a generation. We've cost rental homes now state-backed affordable homes, hundreds of tenants in place. So things are moving in that direction. A future design, to ask your question, and that is basically design of how we would look at intensifying or densifying developments whilst maintaining the quality of those developments. Anyone is obviously entitled to have their view on that. Design guidelines are due to be published later this year.
Yeah, but guidelines are there to be broken.
Oh, no, well, I tell you why they're being published.
And that's the problem.
They're going to be published for public consultation, okay? And that is the thing. I think we all look at good developments that are made and we look at other developments out there that aren't so good or are deficient. And we want to make sure that we continually need to make sure that we are either leading in best practice or that at the very least that we're doing things here in this country and looking at best practice in other countries. But we've made no decision in that regard. I think I'll be publishing the draft guidelines in the autumn. And then people will have their say in them, and then we will look at it in that space. But no decisions in relation to gardens or length of gardens or the things that you have mentioned at all have been made. We want to make sure that we've good homes for our people, be they houses or apartments or duplexes, and that we can deliver the amount of housing that we need to be able to deal with the demand that's out there for people who want to own and live in their own home, okay, and indeed deliver more social.
Now, some of the other elements that have come up, we know that there will be demands to rectify apartment blocks that have fire defects. These are historical Celtic Tiger and pre-Celtic Tiger blocks. The suggestion has been made that there should be an imposition on every new dwelling, be it a house or an apartment, of a latent defects insurance. It seems to recommend itself, because it would mean that someone occupies a house that is built by a developer or a building contractor, and this insurance is in place. So whatever appears over a period of time will be covered, and the taxpayer won't have to pick up the tab. Does that idea recommend itself to you?
It certainly does. I think I read the report of the Construction Defects Group, which I set up. There was really excellent work done there, and it was informed actually by residents who have been affected through the Construction Defects Alliance and the Apartment Owners Network and others and my own officials. And that report came to me just before the summer recess, and I've read through it, and it highlights very serious issues that are there. And it's actually the most extensive survey that's ever been done. 28,000 homes participated in this report, so we've a really good handle on the type of defects that are there. In opposition, I committed that we would do something on this. In government, I want to do that now. I'm going to be assessing the report itself, which I've done, and then bring recommendations to my colleagues in Cabinet who have had very good support for this. So, you know, there are tens of thousands of homes that are affected by this, some relatively minor cost-wise, but very serious with regard to the defect, particularly around the fire defects piece. So I want to bring forward a package of proposals to Cabinet colleagues that can help these families in a really significant way. I said it on your show before that I firmly believe this is a nettle that should be grasped, and I'm doing that, and this government is doing that. The work that was done by the group was really, really significant. I published the report, and anyone who has an interest in it, I would really encourage them to have a look at it and to read it, and you'll see the significant body of work that's done. But now the piece is, okay, well, how do we deal with these recommendations? How do we put these recommendations into implementation? To go back to your initial point, of course, at latent defects insurance, looking into the future to make sure this doesn't happen again. That's one element of it. The other one is quality of the workmanship itself and of the builds themselves. Now, thankfully, I think all of us would recognise in the vast bulk of new estates that are built now and new homes over the last number of years have been built to the highest possible standard and are built extremely well. But we need to make sure that our building control procedures and processes are in place, which they are now, and look towards a building standards regulator, which is something that I want.
But I mean, that should give confidence to the insurers to make available latent defect insurance at an affordable rate. Now, Minister,
I think the point I was making there, sorry, Pat, was that we've seen a big change in the quality already, and lessons have been learned.
Yeah.
Now we want to make sure now that there's that the state has the apparatus in place to make sure that happens. So if you take one thing that we've done already this year is to the construction industry register, which is now on a statutory footing, which means that anyone who wants to get a piece of work done in their home or an extension or windows fitted or whatever that may be, can check the register and make sure that the person who's carrying out that work is someone who is suitably qualified. So there's things on standards going forward we need to do. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Look at insurance, but it doesn't give any right to compensation. I remember talking to the CIF about this. You have a register and you've got all these builders who are certified, but it doesn't give, there's no insurance, there's no comeback if they do a bad
job. The register now is different, Pat, but respect is that it's a statutory register underpinned by legislation. That passed
It doesn't give you compo
before July.
If the guy does a bad job.
But you can't be on the register unless you're properly qualified. Yeah. Now, I do take your point with regard to defects insurance. That's certainly an option that will be looked at. But my priority right now as well is to make sure that the homeowners that have been affected by latent defects and fire defects, that we can bring forward proposals that this government will do, and I will as Minister for Housing, that's actually going to help them in real terms do that, whilst ensuring that this doesn't happen again. Now, I'm much more satisfied with the quality of the work that's undertaken right now and has been over the last number of years. I visit a lot of building sites myself right across the country. I see the work that's done by our local authorities, clerks of work, now back in place. I've provided additional 250, actually 300 additional posts in our local authorities in our building units right across the country to make sure that we're that standards on the ground are adhered to, and they are in the main, which is good. But we need to deal with the legacy issue and to help those families in apartments and out there and homes and multi-unit developments to help them be able to fix the homes that they are in, that they can feel safe and secure in them. And that's the priority that I have now on the basis of the report that I received just a number of weeks ago.
So many other topics, Minister, about rentals and why rental prices keep on increasing. And again, there's a suggestion, I think Carl Dieter made it on this programme, that rental pressure zones have actually caused part of the problem, because new stuff coming on the market with people knowing that no matter what inflation is, the only increase they're going to get is 2%, that they pitch their wares at the highest possible entry level. And this, of course, reads into the DAFT survey, which is about the stuff that's on the market rather than stuff that quietly changes from tenant to tenant. So you get all these headlines about increasing rents, and it's been brought about by the RPZs.
Well, I don't think it's been brought about by the RPZs. I stand over what I did with regard to rent caps and capping rents at 2%, and I think that was an important thing to do within the rent pressure zones. Fundamentally, within the rental market, we have a serious issue with regard to supply. Over the last number of years, we've seen individual landlords leave. They have, we need rental properties. Unfortunately, we've had a situation over the last number of years where landlords have been vilified and where, by certain parts of and certain political parties in particular have led to that. Now, we need rental properties, but we also need to make sure that we're increasing supply of affordable rental, okay, which is in place now for the first time.
So,
ever.
Minister, the last question, and it's something I know even in advance you can't tell me because it's a budgetary matter, but you can give me the general direction of the wind on this. Listeners wanting to know, have the government plans to give landlords tax relief and also tenants tax relief in the budget?
Well, I can't give you any indication of that. Suffice it to say that, look, I'll be working on, and I am working on, budgetary proposals within my own department that I'll discuss with my colleagues in government and the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and Public Expenditure and Reform, Michael McGrath, and colleagues. And we're working through that right now. I don't think it's appropriate to give any indications of what we're working on right now over the air, because nothing has been agreed in that space. One of the positive things, though, is in relation to our building programme, is that because Housing for All is a multi-annual programme, that the €4 billion in capital each year remains in place. So I don't have to go back and argue for capital in that space. I have what I need, and it's the first time we've ever done that, a multi-annual funded housing plan. Of course, there are issues within the rental sector. I'm acutely aware of that, and I'll be working on proposals, and I'm working on proposals in that space. But I don't think it's appropriate for me to fly any kites here this morning on that. But
if there's one,
battling it out with colleagues, you know.
Okay, and I understand that. As I said, I knew you couldn't answer the question, but I will say this: whatever you guys do in government, make sure that it's not done in such a way that the developer or landlord or whatever takes advantage of it, and it doesn't change anything for those, because the history of perks to purchasers and to tenants alike is that it's quickly snaffled up by the other party.
No, I take the point. Look, my whole priority has been is putting one, home ownership right back on the table for thousands of people who haven't been able to buy a home for the last 10 years, and that's now starting to happen. It's happening with the assistance of the Help to Buy grant, but in very significantly with the First Home Scheme, delivering affordable homes for people and delivering affordable purchase. But I'm acutely aware of that whole group of people there who need assistance to be able to buy a home at an affordable rate, which we're doing, and which will ramp up even further later this year into next. But I'm sure we'll be discussing the budget.
I'm sure we will.
Time pass on your show.
And your plans for the planning board. We look forward to all of that. Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.